This is Atenea Americana.
Atenea Americana.
Atenea Americana.
Esto es Atenea Americana.
Stanford 90.1 FM.
Radio Atenea Americana.
A window to the Latin.
This
universe.
Is Atenea Americana.
Atenea Americana.
Bilingual house of culture on the air and online.
Radio Atenea Americana.
Su casa de la cultura en la radio y online.
A la radio 90.1 KCSU Stanford.
I am Isabel Jubes.
Isabel Jubes. Bienvenidos.
Atenea Americana.
Welcome.
Welcome.
Bienvenidos.
From Stanford to the world. The mere mention of Brazil brings images of happiness, dance, party times, football, rainforest, carnival. But lately, brings to everybody's mind the World Cup. For Brazilians, football is not just a sport, but a passion, almost like a religion. In contradiction, the world has been witnessing dissatisfaction of rising conflict in the streets of many Brazilian cities in the last months. On one hand, Brazil is a growing economy and has been for almost two decades. They produce a lot of what they consume. They have newfound deep water oil. They are in the lead on green technologies. They are building their own solar cells, manufacturing a lot of goods and exporting them. They have big construction companies, among other big enterprises. Even when the future seems so bright for them, everything had been slowing down in the last few years, and troubles seem to be everywhere nowadays in Brazil. Today, our guest is Professor Herbert Klein. He is a research fellow at the Hoover Institution and curator of the Latin America collection in the Hoover Institution Library and Archives. He had also been a professor of history and the director of the Center for Latin American Studies at the Stanford University in the past. He is the author or co-author in several languages of more than 20 books and 165 articles on Latin America and on comparative themes in social and economic history. He is also the Morris Professor Emeritus of History at Columbia University.
Been really in the last 25 years a revolution within Brazil. There used to be wide regional variations between rich zones and poor zones. That's all disappeared in the last 20 years. The number of children being produced in the north and in the south are identical. The life expectancy is only 1 or 2 years difference. The level of education is pretty much uniform. And healthcare has been distributed fairly widely.
He is here today to talk about the new emerging middle class in Brazil, all the problems that have been rising in 2014, and the effect of the World Cup.
Good, thank you. I'm glad to be here.
It caught my attention, the talk you make at the Center of Latin American Studies about the emerging middle class in Brazil and the relationship with the unrest, all these things that have been happening right before the World Cup. It seems really contradictory because Brazil is a country that had experienced a lot of development. A lot of people take it today as one of the first most important participants in the world economy. On the other hand, it has been a 5 times winner of the World Cup, and football is like a religion there. People really have strong passions about it. And even at the time when they got the honor to host the World Cup, they had over 80% of approval rate for this. But now everything had flipped and a lot of unrest has been going on in the street. What is really happening?
Okay, it really has to do with the slowdown of growth and the inefficiency of the government. What's happened is really since the return of democracy in 1985 and then the Constitution of 88 and then finally the ending of inflation in 1994 started a boom, and the economy grew very rapidly. And then to add to that, the government began to do income transfers on a massive scale to the really most poor elements in the population in exchange for having kids stay out of in school, women having prenatal care, all these things kind of began to have a major impact along with economic growth in moving about 30 million people out of poverty and into what they call the class C. Brazil divides the classes into consumer classes, A, B, and C. Okay. A is a Mercedes-Benz, B is a Ford, C is a kind of Volkswagen type of situation.
Or the public transportation.
And the C class are those who can afford washers, dryers, TVs, and maybe a very old used car. So that kind of defines the class. And the class is enormous and has grown very rapidly. And there's been really in the last 25 years a revolution within Brazil. There used to be wide regional variations between rich zones and poor zones. In fact, one economist, famous Brazilian economist, Edmar Bacha, called it Belindia. That is, the Northeast was the net level of India, and the South and Southeast was the level of Belgium. So that's why he invented that term. That's all disappeared in the last 20 years. The number of children being produced in the North and in the South are identical. The life expectancy is only 1 or 2 years difference. The level of education is pretty much uniform. And healthcare has been distributed fairly widely. And all of that was going reasonably well into the first Lula government. Then the PT, the Labor Party, took over after Fernando Henrique Cardoso's government and further developed in the first Lula government, first further developed all the social programs, and the economy just boomed. Brazil is now one of the world's great agricultural exporters, not industrial. There's some industry, but the main driving force now is agriculture. And only 15% of the population is rural. So it's a modern, mechanized agriculture of enormous proportions. Well, what happened was you have a whole generation that's now expecting to go to university, is expecting better health care, and so on. The PT has been the most inefficient and corrupt government that Brazil has had in a long time. That isn't to say there wasn't corruption before, but it was usually at the top, and it didn't extend so far down. And what's happened is the PT just tried to turn it into a free party and dominate politics, and everybody thought it would succeed. And so they spent a lot of time kind of organizing parties in Congress. The party situation in Brazil is quite fluid. Parties are formed and deformed, disorganized fairly quickly. And so there was even a famous payoff of monthly fees to senators and congressmen to vote for the state. Wow. That and the fact, so the boom began to slow down because the government became inefficient in the distribution of resources and expenditures. So that instead of expending on one of the biggest problems in Brazil is infrastructure. And so, for example, Brazilians produce soybeans at or better efficiency than American farmers. On the other hand, to get it to the market costs them more, much more to get, because the roads are poor, the railroads are terrible, the ports are a mess. All of these things were, there was no investment seriously in this. Petrobras, which was a famous organization, the oil company, was very powerful and good. And what happened was that there was essentially the government stripped it of income and began to, there have been billion-dollar robberies from Petrobras. I mean, it's really quite phenomenal. They bought a refinery in Texas for essentially $1 billion, and it's never produced. Well, these are minor problems. The other problem is the university. The universities, there aren't sufficient places and they aren't big enough. So the public universities have entrance exams that are tougher than the SATs. And to get into a public university, you have to have gone to a private school. Very few people from public schools got into the university. So the majority of the new middle class has been going to paid private universities. And these are not like our universities. These are like, what is it, the University of Phoenix. They're straight for pay and for profit and terrible. So that they've been shunted off into essentially secondary quality education. The health system, which was quite good and had been revamped and reorganized and was really quite effective, has been, the corruption has been so high that the efficiency has declined, and they've started importing doctors from Cuba.
Why is this happening all through Latin America?
Question then is, you have a new class, a massive class, over 100 million Brazilians are now, 109 million are estimated to be in the middle, in the C class, which is the lower middle class. And they are first generation in, and they're sending their kids to the better schools and trying to get them up into the middle class. And in fact, all of this massive movement at the bottom has meant that the Gini index of inequality has declined in Brazil. Really, it's one of the most extraordinary factors. But it also means that there are frustrated demands that the state can't respond to. And it's expected that the state should respond to that. And so what's happened is the protests have really been about the horrendous inefficiency. For example, there are 40 ministries. Brazil could go with 10 to 18, they say, without any problem. Why do they have 40 ministries? They pay off all the parties. So who are the ministers? They're party hacks who aren't very efficient. They're not technically trained. They're not working for this. And so there's a whole tendency for the government to not provide the basic facilities. And those basic facilities that were provided have been declining. So this is what the protest is all about. And of course, they took one look at you. You saw, I think, if you see in the New York Times, I think it was, where it said that Brazil has spent for 10 stadiums, more than the combined was spent for 8 stadiums in South Africa and 10 stadiums in Germany. So in other words, double and triple. And everybody knew as soon as they were going to do a public construction, the corruption would be high. And so this is the demand. It's a frustration of a new middle class, and it's a new national middle class. It goes from the south to the north. Higher life expectancy. They're down to at replacement for children. They all now have a basic education, primary. Pretty much everyone is in primary school. More and more are going to high school. And the quality of these schools has been declining, not improving. So all of this kind of gives you the background to it. And then it was clear from the World Cup preparations, just everything was just a mess and inefficient. And if this was bad, everybody expects the world, Olympics to be worse.
Yeah.
Everybody I talked to in Brazil said that they could do the World Cup because it's relatively easy. It's just stadiums and make sure that the air transport works and there are no strikes. Mm-hmm. By the way, the other thing is everybody took advantage of the World Cup to go on strike. So the government then...
They have to listen.
The government, the subway system in Sao Paulo went on strike. The airlines tried to go on strike too. That didn't succeed. But essentially what everybody tried, the universities are all on strike. So it was a general kind of melee. On the other hand, they love the football and everybody I know. Yeah. Sao Paulo stopped yesterday to see Sao Paulo play. Croatia. And so they love their football, but they're totally opposed to the government and what it's done. Now, the other thing is Dilma went to the football stadium to see Brazil play, but she didn't give a speech and she went hidden and they still booed her.
As so, I was hearing, it's actually the people that could actually pay for those tickets, they were not the C, they were the A, and they were not really the people that were supporting her.
The Northeast and the North vote solidly for the PT, largely in memory of all of these changes that have occurred. And what's happened is the South, Southeast, and the Center West, which is a new boom area, have essentially voted against. But there's a high probability she will win, but not on the first round, on the second. In other words, she has to get, any candidate has to get over 50% to win. Yeah. And if they don't, then there's a runoff between the two leading candidates.
Second round, yeah. Free Speech TV is an independent, publicly supported nonprofit TV platform that reaches 35 million households in the US. Using both television and the internet, Free Speech TV inspires viewers to become civically engaged in building a more just, equitable, and sustainable society. You can get involved by joining an online community, subscribing to the e-guide or RSS feeds, sharing videos, of course, making a donation. For more information, visit freespeech.org.
And today, in Atenea Americana, we have Professor Herbert Plain, Governor Morris Professor Emeritus of History at Columbia University, Research Fellow and Latin American Curator at Hoover Institution, and Professor of Stanford University. And today, we're talking about Brazil, the emerging middle class, and the effects of the World Cup.
But it actually, when you see the whole picture, it doesn't seem like such a bad thing because it means that the lower class, the really poor people, is getting shorter because now it's opening this new C class.
Yeah, no question about it. Mm-hmm. They say the consumption of the C class is more than the consumption of Switzerland or the Netherlands.
Wow.
I mean, it's enormous. And if it was a country, it'd be something like 18th in the world.
Yeah.
It's an enormous class. And, you know, Brazil has very modern marketing. It doesn't have mom and pop shops too much. And so you have these big malls all over the place. So they're building malls just for the C class.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's really quite impressive what's going on. And I have friends who work in the favela and they say the parents are semi-literate and so on. The kids are all literate. They all have good education, reasonable education, and they all are trying to go to university. So, and everybody, for example, when Lula entered the government, he had a campaign against hunger. And they did a big survey, and birth weight among children, which is a key indicator, one of the key indicators
of hunger,
health and consumption patterns, was normal by by standards, and they discovered that nobody was starving in Israel.
Oh,
and well, there are all kinds of things. Anybody who didn't have a pension automatically gets the minimum wage when they retire. Mm-hmm. So that took care of all the rural workers. And that goes back about 20 or 30 years. They started it, and the Fernando Henrique government and the PT also increased all of this. So you've got there's no correlation between age and poverty in Brazil.
Okay.
And the other big thing is more and more workers are registered. They're not on the informal economy. And that's been a big change. And the other big change was the consumption internal mm-hmm. was so great that it's kept the relatively inefficient industry booming for a long period of time, though the last indicators are there's not much capital investment in industry, and that the economy is kind of sputtering at the moment. But all of that meant that much more of the population was in the Social Security system, paying Social Security taxes with registered work papers. So there's been a revolution, and it's everywhere. It's in the north. It's in the northeast. There used to be massive migrations out of the northeast. No more. People don't migrate more, except a little bit into agriculture. But because there's been a stabilization of standards everywhere, there's really relatively little difference regionally. There's some, but not much. And the gaps between black and white and between regions has also kind of declined. And there's really no difference by sex in terms of educational level and so on. And so the situation is kind of changed in all kinds of other ways. And it more looks like a European or North American country in that sense. A lot of people living together, not married. This is the classic pattern.
It has always been a very liberal country in general.
Right, in that sense, yes.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, there's no illegitimacy. Well, that's all Latin America.
Yeah.
Illegitimacy is gone. So if a parent recognizes a child and puts their name on the ticket, they can be married to somebody else.
Even if
their name is on the birth certificate. Yeah.
And it doesn't say anything about about it. That's right. One of the things that you say really impressed me, like, why when I hear reports about Brazilian economy, you know, they are now trying to get into the green development. They have also been making solar cells. They are they're having a lot of new technology, like the one they show at the World Cup, the robotic part for paraplegic. They are very involved in technology, and they are up there with other countries, high power
universities
countries.
Are the best in Latin America.
Yeah,
there's no question about it. They rank in the top 10. Although this year, Católica in Chile passed USP, the University of São Paulo, so there was a huge cry out. But apparently, 8 of the 10 leading universities in Latin America are Brazilian. So it's got
that's
a good
great.
University system, quite reasonable.
Yeah.
It's got one industry that's as advanced as anything, and that's mm-hmm. Embraer, which I'm sure you've flown on a plane from Embraer. All the regional airlines in the United States use them.
Yeah.
And so it's one of the world's largest airplane companies.
Yeah,
so
and then they bring doctors from Cuba, a little sugar-making island, and they do that all around Latin America. What is happening?
No, that everybody was furious with that. In other words, why not open up more medical schools, put more money into medical schools in Brazil and get more people?
And I bet there are enough doctors. That's just a political deal.
Yeah, it's a political issue, yeah.
And
then you know what happened is they found out that the Cuban government was taking most of the money from the doctors, and so they forced the Cubans to redo the salaries that they were paying their workers in Brazil.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's a little complicated. No, that was a political gesture of hers to seem to respond to the issues, but that's not the issue. The issues were not rural health, which what that was all about, or putting people in something like, 86% of the population, 85% of the population is urban. So, and the urban population is more or less well covered with clinics and public health and so on. So it's making sure that there's more public health and mm-hmm. that not huge lines and waiting times and things like that, mm-hmm. and to open up the universities more, and to open up the economy by investing well in construction of roads and bridges and ports. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, Brazil has some of the world's biggest construction companies, but the inefficiency of the government means that construction starts, it ends, it never finishes. There's a railroad in the north that was never finished. The Bahian subway has been being built for 40 years, and they've got 3 kilometers. And, you know, so on, and they just opened the 3 kilometers. Everybody was cheering, but it was it's really quite impressive. If you look at the metro system, the metro system in Mexico was founded the same year that the one in Sao Paulo is. And Sao Paulo has something like 70, 80 kilometers, and Mexico has well over several hundred kilometers of metro line. And the metro line in Mexico is more difficult to construct. So that gives you a sense of kind of the inefficiency of government, not at the inefficiency of the technology. They have the technology, they have the companies. Odebrecht, for example, is building the roads in Santo Domingo in the Dominican Republic. And that's a big Brazilian company, and they've been all over Africa constructing roads and so on. So it's not as if they don't have the technology or the education.
Yeah, and thanks to that, they were able to finish all these huge constructions that they were set up to build.
This is Atenea Americana, and I am your host, Isabel Jubes. You may find this and all my shows at stanfordhispanicbroadcasting.org. This is a bilingual cultural show, bringing you a window to the Latin and Hispanic universe. Every week, for 2 hours, one in English and one in Spanish, from Stanford to the world. You can also be part of this, leaving me your comments, sharing your thoughts, and even more at stanfordhispanicbroadcasting.org. I invite you to be part of this.
The effect of the World Cup is being known all around, well, many years in different venues, not just the World Cup, also the Olympic Committee, that these things really, they don't make money for countries. It's more about the pride and the history and be part of the history of something that they really love and have the good face and enter into a very private club. So they try, they're there. But it's really, most of them, they say that they break even, but just on the operation side. And then they come back with these colossal white elephants that they will never be able to fill up again, like the one in Macau, like that is in the middle of nowhere and takes thousands of people in a stadium where you cannot get there because there are no highways.
Yeah, well, the same. The problem, not with the stadiums, although they build some stadiums they famous in the Amazon that make no sense because they're no fan. They can't fill up, you know, 20,000, let alone a big stadium. So that the real question was, everybody knew the costs would be there would be huge overruns, and there were, and. The real thing was they want their football, but they want their services, and they want an efficient government. And Brazil should not have a government that it has at this stage of its development. It really needs a government that would heavily invest. And they had, for example, they have a development bank, and most of the money went for helping Brazilian companies buy companies overseas instead of investing inside Brazil. And there's been a tremendous amount of corruption with even the loans and so forth of government banks. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's a very efficient agricultural economy. It's a kind of relatively inefficient industrial sector, though sufficient for the national production. And it's a really a brand new middle class, lower middle class, essentially, that wants betterment for their children and sees... perceives that the government is not producing anything for them and is not helping them. In fact, is essentially leading to, several things. For example, there's a big fear for inflation. Inflation was ended in 94, but they had two periods of hyperinflation. Mm-hmm. And in hyperinflation, the poor really suffer. They can't buy food on a daily basis. You have to buy it on once a month, things like that, because the money doesn't last for the rest of the month. So you go buy the first day that you get your paycheck. All of that has changed now. But then the government began to see prices starting to rise and began to manipulate prices. And it started to manipulate prices, which then created scarcities in certain areas. It affected the ethanol industry by controlling the gasoline price. Petrobras ran out of money. I mean, all of these things. Their famous pre-sal oil fields haven't come on production yet. So everything is slowed down. Everything has been less developed than it should have been, given where the country was. So that's really it.
Founded by Brad Pitt in 2007, Make It Right started as a catalyst for rebuilding New Orleans' Lower Ninth Ward, a neighborhood devastated by Hurricane Katrina. Today, Make It Right builds healthy homes, other kinds of buildings, and communities for people in need nationwide. From Newark, New Jersey, to Montana's Fort Peck Indian Reservation, all Make It Right projects comply with the highest standards of green buildings. If you'd like to donate, visit makeitright.org.
And today in Atenea Americana, we have Professor Herbert Klein, Governor Morris Professor Emeritus of History at Columbia University, Research Fellow and Latin American Curator at Hoover Institution, and Professor of Stanford University. And today we're talking about Brazil, the emerging middle class, and the effects of the World Cup.
That the economies, it was just coming like a high speed train towards a big power, and but then this new experiment came and partly slowed things down.
I don't think it's everybody expects the government to provide healthcare and education, and be a major constructor of the infrastructure. There's total agreement. What the problem is whether it's a, quote, conservative government or a socialist government, they'll do the same thing. Yeah. There's no difference, really. And the whole social network system has been put into place by a kind of middle-class party and by the Labor Party. So it's all there.
Yeah.
So the real question is efficiency, and that's what everybody is concerned with. And with delivery of services. So it's not like the United States, where we have these incredible splits about what the role of government. Everybody in Brazil is agreed on what the government should do, and that's what the protests are. Yeah. And the government is not doing it.
Yeah, I was actually not comparing it to the United States, but to other countries in Latin America.
Right.
Venezuela, Bolivia, Chile, on the other hand, very different path.
No, but you have to remember, everybody in Latin America believes that the government has a role to play, that it is important in providing these services.
Yeah.
And whatever the private economy, the state economy has to be important in education, health, and communications and infrastructure. And these are expected to be where the government should work and provide fundamental support to the economy. To the economy and to the social welfare and the health of its citizens. Mm-hmm. And there's just no disagreement. There's even the most right-wing government. I mean, if you look, Chile was very exceptional. I mean, this business about private education and public education, it goes back to Pinochet and the military period. But aside from that unusual situation, everybody else is pretty much agreed upon what the state has to do and should do.
Yeah.
And more or less all of them do the same thing. They all have, you know, qualified income transfers. They all try to get the kids out into school and out of the workplace. They try to get everybody immunized. They try to get everybody educated. They try to reduce. And it has occurred in most Latin American countries. Even in Haiti, the level of illiteracy has gone down. Life expectancy has gone up in the last 20, 30 years. So everywhere there's a kind of a belief in what the government should do. Mm-hmm. And it's that belief which this new middle class has entered with and sees the possibility that their children will not succeed. You go to a private university, get a law degree, and it's useless. You can't pass the bar exam. Mm-hmm. You end up as a secretary in a law firm. I mean, this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Poor quality. So they protested so much that the Pathé started offering fellowships for students to private universities, which didn't help because they didn't then clean up the private universities. So it's this kind of thing that goes on.
Yeah.
And the public school system used to have elite high schools and then general high schools. They wiped out the elite high schools under the military when they massified secondary education, but then they didn't come back and improve it. So there are just tons of problems that everybody's quite aware of.
This is Atenea Americana, and I am your host, Isabel Jubes. You may find this and all my shows at stanfordhispanicbroadcasting.org. This is a bilingual cultural show, bringing you a window to the Latin and Hispanic universe. Every week, for 2 hours, one in English and one in Spanish, from Stanford to the world. You can also be part of this, leaving me your comments, sharing your thoughts, and even more at stanfordhispanicbroadcasting.org. I invite you to be part of this.
In most of the developing countries, there have been this move towards urban life. And as you say, there are 86% of people live in cities, and they have huge, amazing cities over there.
Right.
What about the indigenous people? How they fit in the whole picture?
Even the indigenous people have a literacy rate of about 80% to 90%, over 80%. So, you know, it is... You know, and of course, the constant disputes over land and of their territories and what they have and the right. But this, and of course, you've got the Amazon rainforest with logging in there and all of the problems that go on. So Brazil has lots of problems, but there's been a kind of generalized consensus of what should be done. The Indians are protected in their areas and educated. Mm-hmm. They all speak Portuguese, or most of them speak Portuguese, and now they've gone back to bilingualism, and some of them are, you know, studying in their own languages. So there's been attempts to kind of deal with the Indian question in a more serious way, though, of course, there's just constant conflict between gold miners and loggers and Indians in their own territories, which is a constant issue. That, the Amazon issue, the expansion of the burnings, all this is, of the forests, all these are big issues that, like any country, there are lots of regular issues that are difficult to resolve, aside from these specific issues.
Yeah, and I bet that these indigenous people, in their culture, they are not interested in getting in any ABC part of the society. They have their own measurements of happiness in their own places and their own development.
Yeah, they don't go to the cities, but stay there. But they like radios and TVs like anybody else, you know what I mean? So, you know, then they want public health, and they want education. So these are issues. I mean, they may want to keep a traditional lifestyle as much as they can, but they begin to adopt a lot of the technology.
Being part of the world. What do you think is going to be the legacy after these two big events, world events?
Well, they say if Brazil loses the cup, she'll lose points in support.
Oh.
If Brazil wins the cup, she'll get a bit of a boost for a while.
Oh,
so that's
a tough place.
And what does it mean? I mean, in the end, the cup will run, and if you see it, it's now moving along very nicely. And everybody's worried about the referees and whether they were correct or incorrect, and all of this kind of, and FIFA, whether it's corrupt or incorrupt. All of these things are going on. But essentially, it's settled down, and they're going to have the World Cup.
Yeah.
The real question is the next thing. And the Brazilians would be delighted to have the World Cup and the Olympics if they had an efficient government.
Yeah. Yeah, they started with the morale around this was almost 80%. Now it's 45% of people who actually like the idea. Right. And I bet if they have...
Has been very steady at about 33%.
And now I bet that if they have other Maracanazo, when they have like huge moral loss, everything will start crumbling down together with the moral of the football behind
it. But everybody expects Brazil to win.
Oh. Well, everybody like Spain came winning 6 years with a lot of attitude and very happy, and now they got very badly started, a horrible start. And Brazil's starting pretty well, but we'll see. Argentinians are in the sure about that.
Everybody stopped to watch. I mean, whether you opposed it or supported, most of the protests have slowed down.
Yeah.
That's the whole point.
The tendency then, if they win or lose, about this path of the politics in Brazil, like this, as you say, very inefficient path of this very, it's kind of the same rhetoric that you are seeing in other countries, although not as strong, thank God, that's where they're still up there. But is this a path that everybody's following, or like going towards this?
The Labour Party was an unusual party. It was the only really strong, unified party in Brazil that survived election after election, and was a good left party when it started. But then it's become a party of politicians who at first robbed in the name of the party and now rob in the name of themselves. So it's really become an extraordinarily inefficient party. Now, it looked like because of the boom that the party would turn itself into the pre-Mexican style, pre of the old school days. That is being a dominant party that would last forever. And it's now clear it won't. Beyond that, nobody knows what's going to happen.
Yeah, that's right. Latin America is very complicated.
There are still enormously dynamic parts of the economy which they haven't touched, which is agriculture. And Brazil can produce anything anywhere of any product. I mean, they're the world's largest of this, that, and the other. From orange juice to chickens, they export all over the world. And that efficiency is still there. The economy still now has a much better educated labor force than it ever had before. More people are involved in the legal economy than ever before. Well over half, that is, the majority are in the labor force. So I don't think you're going to go backwards. I think it's going to be kind of stagnant for a while, and then the political system will implode or will kind of group around new parties, and the new parties will emerge as alternatives to what you've got.
Okay.
So it looks like the long era of the PT will probably end.
Good. Yeah, because they have everything to win. We in the United States, we buy things from China, and China buy things from them, from Brazil. Right. They also have the deep water oil wells that they found. Right, they're working green.
If they can restructure Petrobras and clean it up and give them a fair price for their products, then Brazil would be. But everything, the economic team has not been very good. And since 2008, things have really declined, and really for internal reasons rather than Brazil was not terribly affected by the big crisis. I mean, it was moderately affected, which could easily be resolved. But since then, there have been all kinds of kind of crazy experiments that have not led to economic growth, just the opposite. And so that's what it is. They all say you have to have 5% growth, like in Peru and Chile and Colombia, and they don't have it. And the population is slowing in its growth. That is, the number of children being produced is now kind of world standard, about mm-hmm. 2 per woman, 2.1, a little bit below 2.1, which is the replacement level.
But is that bad?
No, it's good. It's good. In the sense that, but still, we left over is all those women who are 20 to 30 who are producing children, or 15 to 30 mm-hmm. who are producing children. And there were more of them because more of them survived. So even if they're producing less, the number of people entering the labor market. Mm-hmm. So everybody says that you need about 5% to keep the growth going and mm-hmm. to absorb everybody into the labor force. So already the unemployment rate is slowly rising again. For a while, it was almost by Brazilian standards, complete employment. It was only 5% mm-hmm. unemployment, which was extraordinary.
Yeah.
And the other thing, they've changed the laws about loans and things like that. So now there are long-term loans for cars, for housing, and that created an enormous boom. And you had this new class. Which
and they produce a lot of their own stuff. They produce their own cars. They produce a lot of, yeah.
Oh, yeah. They produce flex cars.
Yes.
All right. Technology. Is that it?
Well, yes. Thank you very much. You've been very enlightening.
All right.
Bye. Eu vou pra Oslo, pra sair no Oslodum. Um bloco asfo da terra do bacalhau. Que todo ano cai a neve ou faça sol. Vai pra avenida no dia de carnaval.
And this was Atenea Americana.
Atenea Americana.
Atenea Americana.
Eso fue Atenea Americana.
Stanford 90.1 FM.
Radio Atenea Americana.
A window to the Latin universe.
This is Atenea Americana.
Atenea Americana.
Bilingual house of culture. On the air and online.
Radio
Atenea Americana.
Su casa de la cultura en la radio y online.
Para la radio 90.1 KCSU Stanford.
I am Isabel Juves.
Isabel Juves. Vuelve pronto.
Atenea Americana.
From Stanford to the world.
See you later. Remember to come back soon. Te vemos pronto. We'll be here.
Ciao.